This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, somebody just tell me when it goes through there. Parsky Stelva, everybody, we're going to start with this pasuk. Perek Chavtes Pasuk Gimel Nasan Hashem Lechem Lev Ladas Ve'Naim Lorotzos Naim L'Shma. Toward the end of the parsha, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, or Moshe Rabbeinu says, Hashem did not give you a heart to know, eyes to see, ears to hear, Ad Yom Hazeh, up until now. Meaning up until you knew nothing, now you know what's going on. Now you know what's happening. So what happened on this day to change everything? What are we talking about? What changed? What was this idea? Chizkuni was saying that this was pure Moser that Moshe Rabbeinu was giving all of them. Even today, you still have no idea what a Kadosh Baruch Hu is doing for you. You have no idea. When it says, Ad Yom Hazeh, it doesn't mean until today and now you know. Moshe Rabbeinu is saying to them, even today, you have no idea what a Kadosh Baruch Hu has done for you throughout your lives. This is ridiculous. How do you not know this? Rashi says a little bit of a different medrash. He says that on the last day of his life, Moshe Rabbeinu handed a Sefer Torah to Shevet Levi. He gave a Sefer Torah that's now known as the Sefer Azara, or Sefer Ezra, in which they used that as the official Sefer Torah, where everything was corrected through it, and it was put into the middle of the Mishkan, eventually into the Beis HaMikdash. That Sefer Torah was given over to Shevet Levi. Bnei Yisrael approached Moshe. They said to him, we don't understand. We were present at our Sinai just like Shevet Levi was. Why are you favoring them? Why are you favoring your Shevet over us? Well, I don't understand why you're putting them in charge of us. Once they get the Torah, you know what they're going to do? They're going to put us down. They're going to say, you didn't receive the Torah. We received the Torah. We're the ones in charge. We're going to rule over it because we're the ones that had it. So they said to Moshe Rabbeinu, I don't understand. We should get this Sefer Torah as well. Moshe was so happy, says Rashi, so happy that Bnei Yisrael spoke up in their own defense. And he said to them, today you've become a nation. Ad Yom Hazeh, you did not understand what the Torah was for you. But today, I see that you want to have a relationship with Hashem. I see that you're really, truly a great nation. That I understand you really want to make that happen. Ayelus HaShachar, Rav Aaron Lieb Steinman, points out that Moshe Rabbeinu was Melamed Zchus for them. It sounded like they were complaining, not that they really wanted the Torah for themselves, but they didn't want Shevet Levi to rule over them. They were saying, oh, you put Shevet Levi in charge of us? We don't want any rulers. We don't want somebody in charge of us. We want to be in charge of ourselves. But no, Moshe Rabbeinu understood that behind that notion, they really wanted the Torah. Really, they wanted the Torah the entire time. That's what he understood. But there's a problem. Moshe Rabbeinu gave 13 Sifrei Torah on the last day of his life. That's a medrash, and it's brought down that he brought 13 Sifrei Torah, one to every Shevet and one to Shevet Levi. Every Shevet includes Ephraim and Manasseh, and then Shevet Levi got the 13th Sefer Torah. So I don't understand. If every Shevet got a Sefer Torah, then why in the world were they complaining? He said, you gave one to Shevet Levi, but you didn't give us. But they did get. They got one. It says straight out that they each got a Sefer Torah. So what happened over here? So the Be'er Basada, I mean, my partial answer is maybe they didn't know about that. The Nisim got it, right? But maybe they didn't know, and it wasn't given with as much pomp or fanfare as the original Sefer Torah that was given to Shevet Levi, because that was, the official Sefer Torah. Maybe that's what changed over there. The Be'er Basada says a very, very type of similar idea. But there certainly is lesson here, no matter what it is, says Alenu Lishabach and Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein. Bnei Yisrael had such a love for Torah that nothing could stop them to try to get it. I want you to understand, we're looking at it as like, oh, they ran up to Moshe Rabbeinu and said, Moshe, how could you do this to us? Tell me, you think you would have done that? These people were scared out of their minds of Moshe Rabbeinu. They were scared out of their minds. They looked at Moshe Rabbeinu as a god, a lowercase g god. They were so scared, there's no way they could go up to him. The only way that they were willing to go up to Moshe Rabbeinu is if they were mamish, so upset that they didn't get the Torah, that they were sitting there and saying, what are we supposed to do with ourselves? How in the world could we not get the Sefer Torah? That's the only way that they were willing to do it. That's the pshat. They were so upset at the Torah. And that idea is that if a person wants so much to have the Torah, if somebody's avas haTorah, his love for Torah is so great, then he will do anything to get it. Think of something that you absolutely love. It could be your wife. It could be your kids. It could be about your parents. It could be about anything that you love more than anyone else in your life, and hopefully it's not your phone. Something that you absolutely love. You would do anything for that object. You would do anything to get that object. Do anything to be able to get it back. That's the idea. Reb Pesach Tzvi Frank was one of the great Rabbanim at the turn of the century in the early 1900s in Eretz Yisrael, joined the Rabbanut. One of the first Rabbanim in the Rabbanut was the Av Beis Din at some point under the heading of Rav Kook. Rav Kook allowed him to be the top one. He was once learning Torah by the light of a candle. and the candle blew out. He had no other candles. He had nothing else to do. He wasn't sure what to do. He had no other fuel, no other anything. And I know we're looking at it nowadays and we're just like, come on, just turn on the lights. But basically, he had absolutely nothing else. And then he was sitting there and he's like, but I have to finish. He had an epiphany. He took the chair he was sitting on, broke off a leg, a wooden leg, and then lit that so that he'd be able to see for the rest of the sefer. You'd be able to finish it off on the last of the sefer. You don't do that unless you're mamish in love with the Torah that you're learning. You don't do that unless you're so obsessed you can't do anything else. You have to do that. That's the idea of what Pesach Tzvi Frank was saying over here. Reb Moshe, in Darash Moshe, asked, why did Moshe offer, in fact, to Shevet Levi? I don't understand. They were right. B'nai Yisrael's right. You should have offered to everybody. You should have given to everybody equally. Don't give one sefer to Shevet Levi and say, this is the official sefer. Give it to every single person and say, every single person in Klal Yisrael should have it. But the assumption is, and this is what Moshe says, and it's an awesome line, the rest of Klal Yisrael couldn't do it. You know why the rest of Klal Yisrael couldn't do it? Because everybody else was going to work. Everybody else is going into Eretz Yisrael to be able to work. They weren't going to be able to sit down with the Sefer Torah and learn it. So what were they going to do? They were going to put, I don't mean to say it this way, put the Sefer Torah in a corner, and every hour or two per day, they take out the Sefer Torah and learn it. But then no one's going to learn the Torah. What are you going to have? You're not going to have anybody. So he designated an entire Shevet. And he said to the Shevet, your job is to learn the Torah. Your job is to be this way, that you're going to sit and learn Torah all day long. He took a 13th of the nation, some would say a 12th of the nation, and designated them, said, you are going to be the ones who are going to sit and learn Torah and teach Torah and do everything for them. You're going to be the ones that everybody's going to have. And that's why he gave it to Shevet Levi. Sure, the rest of B'nai Yisrael got a Sefer Torah. But what really was going on here is that B'nai Yisrael saw Moshe Rabbeinu designate his Shevet as the learners, the people who are going to sit and learn and teach the whole time. And they said, wait, what about us? Why don't we get anything? We have to work? Can't we choose to also be learners and teachers? Can't we choose that for ourselves? Is that possible? Can we do that for ourselves? To that, Moshe Rabbeinu turned to them and said, exactly. Anybody who wants to be part of Shevet Levi has the ability. As the Rambam says, Shevet Levi was designated. But anybody that said to themselves that I want to be a leader, I want to be a person who's going to sit and learn, I want to be a person who's going to be a teacher of Klal Yisrael, anyone was allowed to do it. Like Rav Shimon bar Yochai v'Chaverav, they were able to get up and do it for themselves. And that's the pshat, says Rav Moshe, that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't just give the Sefer Torah to Shevet Levi. He gave the ideas of what it means to learn Torah all day to Shevet Levi. B'nai Yisrael complained and said, what about us? And Moshe said, 100%. If you want to do it for yourselves as well, you also have the ability to. Anybody who wants to do it can do it. That was the line that he said to them. And it's an amazing, amazing line. So what does it mean they didn't have a heart to understand? So there's a Malbim here that they didn't have a heart to understand. He goes through three different things that B'nai Yisrael were missing. The Mizrahi says they understood that miracles were happening. Obviously, they understood that. They just didn't know how to be a nation that was full of Hakaras HaTov, missing out on that Hakaras HaTov for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Eilas HaShachar also goes through it, but that's not a point that I want to step on. One thing I want to say is reverse. Reverse says, 100%. After experiencing everything they had in the midbar for 40 years, after experiencing everything, these people should have been on a level to recognize God's greatness on a higher level than anyone before them and anyone after them would ever do. We call them Dor Dea. This is the generation of knowledge. There's an expectation here. How are you not better than what you are? Now, we look at ourselves and we see ourselves as that ikvah sidah mashiach, you know, the heel of everything, as if we're garbage. And we are. Neshama-wise, look, we're at the very, very end, the closest that we can get to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was like, all right, fine, I'm just going to give you Mashiach. And we understand that. But on the other hand, that also makes us the greatest nation in the world. That makes us the greatest of all the people that are all around. Meaning, we are the people who have seen everything. We have all the schosavos that have come from our parents and our grandparents and our great-grandparents and all the way out there. Although it might be Yeridas Hadoros, and those generations have made us minimize our abilities, so that it's no longer the ways that we used to. It's difficult for us to memorize Telem Baal Peh like our great-grandmothers did. It's difficult for us to learn Torah Shebaal Peh the way Torah Shebaal Peh is supposed to be written. We have this Eis Laso Slash Amepiru Torah Sech, where we matter so many things for ourselves to go through. But guys, look at what we're Zocha to. Look at the world that we're living in. We have all the unbelievable amenities of the modern day era. Everything with phones and computers and planes and cars and everything else that the world has to offer. With running water and bathrooms and toilet paper. There's so many simple things that we take advantage of where we don't die of dysentery every time we drink water from a lake. It's like we have unbelievable schuyos. We have medical advancements, the likes of which that have improved each year, improved more. And then they create something like, you know, like like some type of smoking apparatus that kills it. But regardless, we have unbelievable things that have one after the other that help improve our lives day after day after day. And look at us. Look at us. How are we not appreciative? If we would have been born 100 years ago, we would have the worry of what's happening in the Holocaust. We would have the worry of working on Shabbos if we lived in America. We'd have the worry of all the issues that every country had. We no longer have that. How in the world do we not appreciate it? That's what Rav Hirsch is saying. Rav Hirsch is saying your minds should have been wide open to everything that's happening. You should have seen everything. You had nothing else to do. You're eating mun. You're drinking Bereshit Miriam. You're living in clouds. You're sitting and learning all day. How do you not have the eyes and the ears and the heart to understand? And I'm telling you, this is going to be a taina on us, Lasid Lavo. Yes, we're the Yiridus Adaros. Yes, we have our issues. There's no question whatsoever. Our abilities might not be there. But how are we not davening every Shemona Esrei with the greatest motive of all time for all the opportunities that we have? How do we not do that? And I'm blaming myself. I'm saying this to myself as much as I am to anybody else. Isn't it the craziest thing in the world that we don't appreciate it more? That we're the biggest complainers in the world? Over what? We live awesome lives. What do they call them? First world problems. Because they're nothing in comparison to what our great grandparents had to deal with. And I know to us they seem big, and they are. They're big to us. But the appreciation has to be there as well. That's the concept Rav Hirsch says over here. And it's an amazing, amazing line. Why now? Now, Moshe Rabbeinu turned to them and said, do you realize you're going into Eretz Yisrael? You're no longer going to have these amenities. You're not going to have the Bereshit Shomer. You're not going to have the Mun. You're not going to have the Anani HaKavod. You're not going to be free from work. You're going to have to do things every single day. It's not going to be easy. Appreciate what you have now. And that's what he meant by that time. Right now, appreciate what it is. The Ibn Ezra says an amazing line regarding Kafoy Tova, regarding this idea, how much they got from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and what HaKadosh Tova is. And the Miyam Loei says that connects the end of the Parsha to the beginning of the Parsha. The beginning of the Parsha is about Bikurim, bringing your first fruits to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What that means is that, you know, those restaurants where you see like the first dollar that they made and they frame it and they put up on the wall. They say like, here's the first dollar. Our line is you take that first dollar and you immediately give it to tzedakah. You take your first 100 and you give it to tzedakah. Our Bikurim means you take your first fruits, you tie the little plastic around it, you say, that is my first fruit. You take it in a golden basket if you could afford it. You brought it over to Yerushalayim. You took time off of work to walk it over to Yerushalayim. Then you brought it to Yerushalayim, gave it over into the Beis HaMikdash and said, these are my Bikurim. And you spoke out lines, Arami, Ovidavi, Bayer, Mitzvah, Vyagosham, Musamad, etc. You're willing to do all that. Says to me, Amalois, that connection is to the end of the Parsha as well. We start the Parsha of Kisavo with Bikurim, giving the first fruits, giving back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for everything he's given us, and we end the parsha with the same idea, the same concept of, don't you realize what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has done for you? That's the idea that goes all the way over there. There's a shach over here, a sforno, an amazing sforno. Let's skip down. The Chidush HaRim says he knew exactly why the people didn't understand. He says an unbelievable line, and I really like this. The idea is like this: miracles that are beyond the boundaries of nature do not affect you as much as you wish they should. When you see a miracle happen, it affects you at the moment, no doubt whatsoever. Those who were around by the Yom Kippur War, those who were around by the Six-Day War, the people that were there at that time were unbelievably impressed. They say that the amount of people that asked for tefillin after the Yom Kippur War was so great that every single sofer was writing up as much as they could right there at that moment, because there were hundreds, thousands of people, thousands of Jews that were totally religious that ran to go get tefillin because they mamish thought they had seen a miracle, an open miracle of their eyes, and they very well might have. An open miracle that they saw with their very eyes. But how long did it last? A week? A month? A year? Some people may have lasted for a long time, but very few. Because miracles that are beyond our ordinary nature, things that we don't expect, something like that, it'll affect you for a little bit. And then what happens? Life happens. Then life happens. You could see clouds in the sky that spell out the words, I am God, worship me, I'm called Hashem, and Davin. And at the first, you'll be like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. You'll take your phone out, you'll take pictures of it, and you'll send it out to everyone, right? You'll make it your status on WhatsApp, right? And that'll be your big thing, and you'll do everything right over there, right? And then all of a sudden, 5 days later, you'll be like, yeah, it was cool. It was cool. But that doesn't help me wake up in the morning. I remember the first time when I got smicha, right? When I got smicha, I remember coming home. I was young, and I got up for like an 8 o'clock meeting, I think, or something like that. And my brother, my younger brother, 4 years younger, Rafi, he was like standing there looking at me, and he's just like, "You're a rabbi? Get up for an 8 o'clock shachar?" So I'm like, "What do you mean? Rabbis can get up late, also, right? It happens, and it was still 8. It's not like it was 12:30. 30 and I'm going to like a Hasidic minion in the middle of Borough Park. Like I'm still doing like 8 o'clock, but he's just sitting there and he's like, he expected so much. And I'm like, yeah, the inspiration lasted a minute after I got smicha. I was like, all right. And then what? And then what happens? It's the same thing with any sports team. Whenever you win a World Series, you win a Super Bowl. What happens 5 days later? You're like, hey, what happens after that? If you have a, I mean, maybe by hockey it's different because you bring the cup everywhere. So you keep the thing lasting a little bit longer. But the concept is right there that it's a little bit different. Says the Chiddush HaRim, don't you realize? It's just only now they were given the Torah, the miracles were written down for them. They were able to see the miracles in the Sefer Torah itself. They looked at it, they appreciated it. Now all of a sudden it was different. They were able to process it, go through it. But until that point they didn't because it was a miracle world. Miracle worlds don't affect you as time goes on. You see it as commonplace, you see it as normal happenstance, or you look back at it and you kind of remember it as, yeah, it was cool. But that doesn't affect you in the same way. That's the Chiddush HaRim and how he understands it. The Meshech Chochma continues that thought. He says, how could they possibly go off after all those miracles happen to them? The answer is that literally a miracle life is enough to root within you Yesodei Adas. The foundations of growth are right there for you. But that doesn't mean you're going to be able to go through everything else. The key to life is to live it in the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to live it. We're not in Adam Rishon before the Chet world. We're in a world after the Chet. The world is supposed to be a normal world where we live our lives and we go through taivas and we suppress them. We knock them down. We work on ourselves. We make ourselves better. We find different taivas that are positive instead of negative. Taivas for learning or taivas for being with family or things like that. That's the idea of what we try to do with our lives. It changes in such a way. That's how the Meshech Chochma understands it. On the other hand, the Netziv, Rav Natali Tzvimi Berlin, he goes and he says, part of the problem that Bnei Yisrael had in the Midbar was exactly this. They wanted to get out of miracle world. They couldn't stand anymore. They asked for the Meraglim to get out of miracle world. They didn't want these miracles anymore. They said, we want a normal world. We want to be normal. We want everything to be in the regular way, the way it was supposed to be, etc. The problem was they felt that they couldn't go into a world where they thought that maybe they would have to win naturally. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm gonna make sure that you win. But they said, but we want a natural world, and a natural world is not going to be that way. It says the Netziv, it's sort of the opposite. It's like sort of, it's not that it was a miracle world that knocked them down. It's because they wanted the natural world too badly. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you're never going to be in a fully natural world. I'm always going to be there for you. There's always going to be Ashgacha Pratis. It's going to change a little bit. There's a Tam V'Das over here as well, Rosh Sternbach. It's the basic idea over here, but he goes into quite a bit. So what happened? What changed on that day? Really, what changed on that day? Was it really just that over there? So the Meshech Chochma, and this is Reb Meir Simcha of Divinsk. Reb Meir Simcha of Divinsk, the Or Sameach, he says there was something major that happened on that day. As we said before, Moshe Rabbeinu was a lowercase g god in their minds. Remember, the generation that Moshe left Mitzrayim with, that generation that saw all the miracles in by Kriyas Yamsuf and by all those things, they were mostly dead. The people that were around now were under 20 at the time, aside from obviously Kalev and Yoshua. And maybe they weren't even born yet. These were people who had never seen Moshe Rabbeinu other than a leader who was glowing from his face and spoke to God. So they didn't see him as a normal human being. They saw him as a god. On this day, Moshe Rabbeinu, everything's going to change. Because until now you thought, I'm going to be with you forever. Until now you thought, I'm never going to die. I'm a god. How could anything happen to me? But today, I'm going to die. Ara yom hazeh. Until today, you didn't think you'd have to do anything with your lives. You thought I would take care of everything for you. But today, things are going to change. On this day, when I die, you're going to realize that I'm a human being, that everybody is human. Things happen. Therefore, ala yom hazeh, now you'll understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was leading us the entire time. Now you'll see with your eyes and hear with your ears and understand that I was never doing anything, says Moshe. It was always HaKadosh Baruch Hu behind us the entire time. That's a great Meshech Chochma. And it's go throughout that Meshech Chochma has five different pieces and five different parshios. But regardless, it's a Gur Aryeh.
Are you overstating that? Did they think that Moshe wasn't?
I'm not overstating. According to the Meshech Chochma, I'm not overstating it. Meaning exactly as it was. They mamish thought he was malachi, angelic, could not die, was going to be with them forever. And when Moshe told them, I'm going to die, they were like, whatever. It could happen, but probably not.
But a demigod, not...
A demigod. That's what I mean, lowercase g. not like a full, not HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They always thought that he was the godliness of human beings, but they always thought it. Listen, guys, I mean, we all read books, right? Mostly. Mostly of all of us, most of all of us read books, right? You always expect, like, the ending to be one of those. This is, like, this is by far the most tragic ending you can ever imagine to a sefer. Like, you get up to the end, and you're just like, come on, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of course, is going to let Moshe Rabbeinu in. Why wouldn't he let HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Why wouldn't he let Moshe Rabbeinu in? When he says, like, stop davening, you're like, okay, but really, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's really going to happen, right? And then in the end, it's like, and Moshe dies, and that's it. And you're just like, what? That's the end? That's how it ends? B'nai Yisrael were exactly like that. They always thought, no matter what Moshe Rabbeinu was telling them, guys, I'm going to die, it's not going to happen, I'm not going to Eretz Yisrael. They're like, okay, whatever. You don't think Moshe Rabbeinu is going to get the rachamim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? You don't think he's going to lead us into Eretz Yisrael? They were all expecting it. And in the end, it didn't happen. And they were shocked. What do you say, Dave?
But Yaakov, for example, dies outside of Eretz Yisrael. I mean, granted, they brought his body, and I know there's midrashim that say he was still alive and all the other stuff. But yeah. At the end of the day, Pashat Pshat is that he died in Eretz Yisrael and he was embalmed.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that you could say that there is maybe some advantage and some way to being Chutz La'aretz, dying
Chutz La'aretz? No. Advantage? No, disadvantage. The reason why Yaakovino had to die in Chutz La'aretz was something that was considered. It was considered because of the chet of the four marrying sisters or marrying the wives, even though that would have to be done at the time, and you have all the different answers of Gershon, Yisgarikot, and Shnolo Dami, etc. But one of the reasons why he had to die in Chutz La'aretz is because he had two wives that were sisters, or possibly even four wives that were sisters.
Later on in the future, you have situations like, obviously, the Gemara and stuff that's written, you know, Bavli and stuff.
No question whatsoever. But there is such a mila that goes behind Eretz Yisrael, especially being buried in Eretz Yisrael, dying in Eretz Yisrael. And Moshe Rabbeinu knew it, and especially if Moshe Rabbeinu would have made it in, as Chazal say, everything would have happened. The Beis Hamikdash would have come down. Everything would have been perfect, etc. They had that expectation, and it just never happened. They never had that expectation by Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu, they expected him to die in Chutz La'aretz. The bringing to Eretz Yisrael was something different, but they had that expectation. The expectation was there, and it just didn't. It didn't come into fruition. It was a shocker, beyond a shocker.
So Moshe dying was a lesson, actually.
It was a lesson. And that's how the Meshech Chacham understood it. It was a lesson to all of them, and they understood an unbelievable thing. And that's what he told them. He told them, you now have eyes. You now have ears. Now you understand. Now you understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is really in charge. That's the idea behind it. Then there's a Gur Aryeh. This Gur Aryeh goes into what I titled the Shir as, right? Simply put, it's been 40 years. At some point, they were bound to see it. It took them this long to recognize the chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It takes 40 years to understand it. Rebbe Yashu says it's 40 years since Matan Torah. 40 years since then. This is when their senses became aware of everything around them and allowed them to understand things that they did not understand before. And so again, the way Rebbe Yashu and the Gur Aryeh are saying it, it's been 40 years of learning, which they go through. And granted, it's only been 39 years and 10 and a half months. I agree with that. But nonetheless, they are learning. They got something that they never had before. Rashi, in this pasuk, in his Dover Acher, the Rabbeinu Bechaya and the Baal HaTurim say, right after this pasuk, after it says, I have now given you the ability to see Adiyom Hazeh, the next pasuk is, V'olich Eschem Arbayim Shana B'Midbor. I brought you through the desert for 40 years. Here's what they say. It's a hint. It takes 40 years to understand Das Rabo and Chochmas Mishnaso. You understand your Rebbe and figure out what he's trying to say? It takes 40 years to do that. And they quote, as it says in Avodah Zarah Heyamabez. Okay? Now, the wording of Rabba and that Gemara, I want to be careful because this is going to be an important point over here. Rabba says, Shma Mina, from this pasuk, we learn from here, Lo Koi Inish Adaiti De Rabbe Adarboin Shana. You can never understand the Das of your Rebbe until 40 years. Meaning, the expectations were lower until now. Now the expectations are high. So tell me, when you hear that line, you hear this Baal HaTurim, you hear this Rabbeinu Bechaya, this Rashi, as well as the Gemara, does that mean 40 years of learning by your Rebbe, or the age of 40? Now, I would tell you, it means 40 years by your Rebbe. I would have to learn by my Rebbe for 40 years altogether. If I started learning by him by the age of 21, I would have to wait until the age of 61 to fully understand my Rebbe, which means at the age of 40, nothing changes. There's no mila to turning 40. There's no mila. The mila is to spend 40 years learning. And when you have 40 years learning, then you're going to understand everything. Then you're going to understand where everything comes from. But the Maskil LeDavid, a parish on Rashi, says...
That's a pretty young Rebbe, though.
I'm sorry, to be able to go through. But he says, no, what that could mean is that, no, I learned a lesson 40 years ago from my Rebbe. I have to mull it over for 40 years. I don't have to learn by him straight for 40. I have to mull it over 40 years. I'll only understand what he said 40 years later.
So if you move out to a different world, the idea is still living with
exactly. You still have that, and that's okay. You'll still be okay. The Maskil of David says, it doesn't mean that way. It means when one reaches the age of 40, he says, then you'll be able to understand what your Rebbe is saying. He brings him from Pirkei Avos, Perek Hei Mishnah Chav Zayin, Ben Mem Labina. When you're 40 years old, you get a different level of bina, of understanding. Your level of understanding goes up. Everything is different at that point. You become a person who can understand, and that's 40. At the age of 40, that's not learning for 40 years. That's without a question, because it says over there, we all know the idea, ben hey lechomesh, right, lemikra, ben yud lemishnah, ben yud gimor, yud tesvav for gemara, etc. Ben mem is talking about labina. That's for sure talking about an age, the age of 40 you got there. Therefore, it seems there, but says the Maskil of David, that's not Pashup Shat in the Gemara, that you reach the age of 40. Pashup Shat doesn't seem that way, and that's why Rashi only used it as a Dover Acher. Because seemingly it's 40 years of learning, not the age of 40. That's how the Maskil of David puts it. Now, there's a parish on the Bala Turim. His name is the Ateres Adar. The Ateres Adar writes down, he points out the Bala Turim, and he points out this Mishnah together in Parshas Ekev, Perikhes Mishnah, Pasuk Dalet, where they seemingly have nothing to do with each other. He says there's something wrong over here. Ben Mem Labina, he says, without a question, is a person turning 40, and that's that. But it seems from the Gemara obvious that you have to spend 40 years with your Rebbe, right, to understand what he's saying. So there's two points. At 40 years old, you understand things better. But you won't understand your Rebbe until you learn by him for 40 years. Two totally separate things, he says, and that's that. But, he says, Rashi and Rav Avadimi Bar Tanura connect these maimarim to one another. And says, when it says, Ben Mem Labina, you turn 40, you understand? That's what it means in that Gemara to learn by your Rebbe for 40 years. Meaning, Rashi and the Bar Tanura both understand it as being, when you turn 40, you will understand your Rebbe better. Not learning by them for 40 years. They're connecting with this Mishnah Pirkei Avos. When you turn 40, everything's going to change. Tosfos Yomtiv and Rav Yosef Engel immediately ask, right there on that Mishnah, Tosfos Yomtiv and Rav Yosef Engel ask, they say, wait a second, they have nothing to do with each other. It's 40 years old and then 40 years by your Rebbe. They have nothing to do with each other. But Rashi and the Bar Tanura 100% connect them, and it seems it's right there. So Tosfos Yomtiv understands it in two different ways. He tries to answer it up in two different ways. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu was turning to Klal Yisrael and said, it's been 40 years. Now tell me, guys, is that an age or 40 years of learning under Moshe? Seems 40 years of learning under Moshe. What does that mean? That means every time it's 40 years of learning under Moshe. So what's Rashi and the Bar Tanura talking about in the Mishnah? What are they saying? He says something unbelievable. He says, it could be he was only talking to the people who just turned 40. There were people who were born at Matan Torah. And he turned to those people, who turned 40 and said, guys, you just turned 40, now you'll understand what I'm talking about. The guys who are 41, 42, 43, all the way up to 60, they already understand what I'm talking about. But you guys who just turned 40, you guys know what I'm talking about right now. That's one way, which I think is an unbelievable stretch. But there's another one, and there's an awesome one. You were going to say that? What does that mean? A ger that's megayer is like a little kid who was just born. What does that mean? When Bnei Yisrael accepted the Torah on Har Sinai, they were like gerim that just became gerim. They just were megayer. Guys, if you're just megayer, that means they're 1-0. They're a day old. Everybody was a day. So everybody turned 40 on this day. On this day, where it had been 40 years since it had happened, right? 40 years. And I know it's not exactly 40 years. Now they were all 40. You're all 40 years old now because it's been 40 years since that happened. Now you're going to be able to understand.
Does that include Moshe Rabbeinu?
I'm sorry?
Does that include Moshe?
It sounds like it includes Moshe Rabbeinu as well. And on Moshe Rabbeinu's last day of his life, he said, I turned 40 also. I'm fully understanding what it was supposed to be. And maybe that means that's what Parshat Hazinu is. He understood everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him and put it all into Hazinu.
And
maybe that's what it means.
Can you speak from experience? How does it feel?
Oh, I don't know yet. So hold on. Hold on. So that's that. That's the Tosfos Yomtiv. It's two answers that I think are brilliant. And by the way, the Pardes Yosef asks the question. He looks at that Tosfos Yomtiv and he says, wait a second. How can it be that a ger could be considered a baby if he converts at the age of 20? At the age of 20, does that mean that he only really turns 40 when he's 60? He only turns 40 of that. Are we messing up by every Ger and Gioris? Like when we wish them a happy birthday and they're like, I don't know, let's say they're 55. Really, we should say like, oh, you were Megayer at the age of 23. So really, you're not 55. You're 55 minus 23, which is 32. Say happy 32nd birthday. It'll help with the candles, but is that really the pshat you're supposed to do? I'm sorry? Right, is there a bar mitzvah at the age of 13? Right, is there that? Listen to what the Pardes Yosef says. There's a lach metoda, an achron, an early achron, that says that there are opinions that just like a child is not judged in Shemayim until the age of 20. We all know that, right? Ben chaf la'onshin. Same applies for a ger. A ger is not judged until 20 years after he's Megayer. Do you hear that? If you're a Megayer at the age of 30, right? You don't get judged in Shemayim until you're 50 because you have to have 20 years in which you're there. Obviously, it's based on this. So he says it's actually halacha. According to the Lach Metoda, you mamish need 40 years after the gerus in order to be considered that way. There might even be halachic nafkamina. And so, what's up, Paul?
What about, we also when we get married, all of our
sins. Oh, it's considered, but that's a little bit different. Not that you're reborn, it's that you start over in sins,
right?
That we need, Baruch Hashem, right? But that's one thing. But that's not like you're born again. So that's not you're at the age of one day. You get what I'm saying? This, you're mamish one day old. He says that that's the idea behind it. So too, there seems to be a halachic nafkamina over here. Sota chaf beis mabeis says that a person can do hora at the age of 40. This is a Gemara. Sota chaf beis mabeis. You can paskin halachos at the age of 40. Rashi says, lishitaso, Rashi to Pirkei Avos, this refers to his age, not how long he's been learning. Tosfos says, no, it goes by how long he's been learning Torah. You have to learn for 40 years before you can paskin. But according to Rashi, it's the age of 40. The Ramah paskins in Simon Reish Mem Beis Lamed Aleph like Rashi. But you see, this is an actual nafkamina. There is a major nafkamina here. What is it? Is it the age of 40 or to get to 40 years of learning? There is a nafkamina. When can you start doing Hora, according to the Ramah? When do you start paskining? There's an unbelievable Gemara. Torah Tumim brings down this Gemara. Bab Metzia Lama Gimel Beis. Rav Huna turned to Rav Chista and said, I don't need you, you need me. They were machbaning each other, says the Gemara, for the next 40 years. 40 years. Why 40 years? Because Rav Huna felt that Rav Chista had to learn under him for 40 years in order to understand. Rav Chista was over the age of 40, but he needed 40 years to fully understand what Rav Huna was saying to him. Now, Rabbeinu Hananel says, you have to be makabel from me for 40 years before you can argue with me. The Marshal learns differently. But according to the Rabbeinu Hananel, Imamish has to be 40 years to understand his Rebbe. And that's the way the Rabbeinu Hananel. So seemingly, I would think that Rashi, the other Pirushimir, as well as the Bala Turim, are saying when they say, Ad Mem Shana Ein Adam Omid Al Das Rabo, until 40 years you don't get the Das Rabo, I think that means 40 years old. Not 40 years old together of learning from your Rebbe, but 40 years old. That's the idea behind it. It certainly sounds like the age of 40. I didn't, and I know I'm a fool for not doing so. I should have looked up the tour on that Ramah in Simon Reish Mem Beis. I meant to do it today, and I just totally forgot about it. But the tour on Reish Mem Beis, what does he say? When can you paskin? The Ramah says you can't paskin until 40. What does the tour say? Does the tour say 40 years? Does he say 40 years of learning? What does the tour say? According to what I think right now, it should be the age of 40. I think that's what he should say. That's what I think it is over here. Rav Yashiv just brings up, he says, well, there's an obvious shot to this, and everybody knows it. What year did Rabbi Akiva start learning?
40.
The age of 40. I think it was on purpose, because at the age of 40, says Rav Yashiv, that's when he started to understand there's something else to life, because he understood things a little bit differently, and therefore he started learning over there. But we all know he definitely started paskening before that. When did Rabbi Akiva start paskening? Well, after 24 years, he already had the 24,000 Talmidim, right? He already had all those Talmidim. So clearly he was paskening before that time, before 40 years of learning. And you can't say, well, it's different when you're 40. We just said that it's either 40 years altogether or the age of 40. Seems like the age of 40 is the way. I'm sorry?
His grandfather's from
Rabbi Kiva ben Yosef, although some say that Yosef himself was a ger, others say that his grandfather was a ger, right? And we know that Rabbi Kiva was still a great man before that. He was the Dan Lechav Schus story in Shabbos, right? And Daf Kuf Chav Beis. But the other things that are there, we don't know. We don't know much else about Rabbi Kiva beforehand. We just know about what happened when he met Rachel by the, you know, Ben Kalba Savua, when he worked from Ben Kalba Savua. What time do we have? What are we on?
9:12.
All right, I'm going to end with this then. We'll end with this piece right over here. The Chassam Sofer in Drasha says that every single Jew is connected to Moshe Rabbeinu through the root of their neshama, the root of their soul, in a way where there's no real chiluk between them and Moshe Rabbeinu. They're mamish connected to Moshe Rabbeinu completely. Once they reach 40, the age of 40, they had access to all the levels that Moshe Rabbeinu had. But here's the difference. Moshe Rabbeinu had everything clear, as if everything was categorized. You know, like in a computer, you have everything in files, and you know exactly where everything is. That's how Moshe Rabbeinu had everything. They also had access, because they were connected to Moshe Rabbeinu. They all had it, but it was jumbled up in their mind, and they couldn't grab things out or understand it as well as they possibly could. That's the difference behind it. When the idea behind what he was saying, the koach, the chachma, that Moshe Rabbeinu worked on for years, were now able to be accessed by everybody else. I don't know if everybody's heard the story, but it's a famous one. There's two different ones, with by the Brisker Rav and by Rabbeinu Masud, the father of the Baba Sali. Rabbeinu Masud had a shaila, and he wasn't sure what to do. Oh, it was the opposite. It was the Abir Yaakov, the father of Rabbeinu Masud, the father of the Baba Sali. The Abir Yaakov had a shaila, and he spent 2 days trying to figure out the shaila, right? He eventually was able to figure it out. Rabbeinu Masud said to him, what was the shaila? So don't tell me the answer, tell me what the shaila was. He told it to his son, Rabbeinu Masud, and he went to a corner, spent 8 hours, came back and gave him the answer. So his father, the Abir Yaakov, was shocked. Turned to him and said, how in the world did you figure out this answer so quickly? Rabbeinu Masud said, once you brought it down, it was easy for me to grasp. It was easy for me to be able to take. Easy is 8 hours, right? But it was easy for me to be able to take down. That's the concept. So too, when it comes to this, once you hit 40, they were able to access what Moshe Rabbeinu had. It wasn't easy, but it was easier for them to take it down because it was already opened up in front of their minds. That's the idea behind it, everyone. Have a great Shabbos. Should be good.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.